Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Vanessa Reiser is a licensed social worker, therapist, and an abuse survivor from New York. Her personal and professional histories have been deeply varied, but what remains to be constant are her tenacity and strength. She has reinvented herself and her path several times, but most especially after escaping an abusive relationship in 2020. Amidst all that came next for her, Vanessa has harnessed the media in all facets to curate healing and offer support to other survivors. The Broken Cycle Media team is extremely thankful Vanessa was willing to share with us what she could about her transformative journey and all the awareness that's come from it.
My name is Vanessa Reiser. I am a licensed clinical social worker practicing in the states of New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Florida. I grew up in Rockland County, New York. My parents divorced when I was 9. I have 2 younger brothers. A lot of adversity. My mother was manic depressive, or what they call now bipolar. It was particularly evident. She would have a dream in the springtime. So we sort of developed an understanding that when she would walk out of her bedroom in May and say, "I had a dream," we were like, "Ah, we're fucked," because now she's going to switch into this manic creature who is very artistic. My mother's an artist. She was going to change the world through her art. And that left us not really being in full sight by her. She was prioritizing herself. And in her depressive state, she was rather sorrowful. My maternal grandmother committed suicide when I was 5. So there was a long history of mental illness, and my mother really struggled with ups and downs. So being the oldest child, there was a lot of me having to raise my brothers. I remember times where there wasn't food or there wasn't heat. So it was sometimes tricky to manage. My father left when I was 9. He came every other weekend and we enjoyed time with him, but ultimately he passed away when I was 18 years old. My brothers were 16 and 13, and that was particularly hard for all of us. My middle brother at the age of 16 really struggled with that, mostly because he was in the room when my father passed. So then fast forward, I started working at a gym. And then I started another job working for the telephone company, which most people find pretty interesting because I climbed telephone poles for 8 years in Westchester, New York, where I met my son's father. That was not a bad relationship. He is not a pathologically disordered person. So fortunately, I never co-parented with somebody who was particularly toxic. I started a daycare when I had my son so I could stay home with him. When I went to school, it was for community organizing and social policy. It was not to become a therapist. It was way more to change the world. I'm so passionate about issues on a macro scale. Inadvertently, because what happened with my mother's burden with her own mental health, she really had the golden child who was my brother. My brother struggled with sobriety. He's now sober 5 years, which is such a blessing because we all figured him for dead many years ago. He really dug himself into a hole and now he's finally coming out of it and is one of my best friends. And I'm so super proud of him. But my mother wasn't so great at managing that relationship. Because of that, I was really disappointed. I thought I wanted to get involved in social work so that I could work for women specifically, because some of his behaviors at the time were really disturbing to me. That was the original thought process. But why I became a social worker is interesting. There was this moment after undergrad where I had a poli-sci focus, and I asked an instructor if she would give me a referral to graduate school. And she said, no, I don't even know you. And then she started probing me about why I wanted to go to school. And I told her I wanted to work maybe in a political campaign. She says, well, you don't want to be a politician then, because if you are a politician, then you have to be quiet. You have to just be a stuffed shirt. And I thought, oh, shit, that's not going to work for me. She said, why don't you become a social worker? So this idea of advocacy is really what kind of catapulted me into it. I went to school, got my master's from University of Southern California, and became a therapist. I was 42 when I graduated with my master's. I was an older student. I started college late because of all this adversity. So my son was older. As a matter of fact, when he started to apply for college, I had just finished doing so. We kind of grew up together. I had him young. I managed to do that with him sort of in tow. He was always with me. At one point, I remember taking a salsa class for extra credits at school, and I remember having him in the room.
You're amazing. It speaks to your resilience and your fortitude. At what point did you experience your own narcissistic abuse?
In hindsight, there were a few of these miserable souls along the way, but the one that was particularly enlightening was an engagement I had. It was after my second marriage. There was a relationship that I had that was really, really over the top love bombing and really, really over the top gaslighting. There's this covert version and then there's the overt. Specifically, gaslighting is interesting. And I think a good barometer is anytime you feel like you're getting confused, it's a little bit of a slippery slope. Gaslighting isn't necessarily as obvious as somebody saying to you, I didn't say that, when you know full well that they did. It's also deflection, projection, and confusion around a word salad, we call it, which is these circular conversations so that you become broken down and increasingly more confused. Anytime somebody tries to confuse you, deflect you, shift the conversation, that is a version of gaslighting. So I'm already on high alert when I'm in communication with people that do that, where they shift your focus away. And a good example would be if you find out your partner's cheating on you and then they deflect and say, well, how did you find out? You went through my phone, how dare you? It's this manipulation of the conversation so that you will become confused. And also they can do this thing where they'll mirror you. So let's say you say to your partner, I feel like you're being condescending. And then they go, well, you're being condescending. Again, you're getting confused. You're off topic. It's just a slippery slope. So it's not to say that it's necessarily this raging narcissist, but it's getting murky and you need to redirect it. Love bombing only becomes love bombing with the additive of devaluing. Somebody can just be kind to you for the rest of your life, and we would never characterize that as love bombing. It only becomes love bombing in hindsight, which makes it really tricky. And this is where somebody is giving you these long text messages or flooding you with phone calls and flowers and gifts and adulation. You are my soulmate. You are the most amazing lover. We were destined to be together. I want to marry you. Let's have babies and white picket fences, all of this garbage, depending upon their resources, can be particularly convincing because you might say to yourself, wow, this person has flown me to France in a helicopter, or this person who has no resources is crying on their knees with their mother in the room. They must not be lying. Or this person got a matching tattoo or got my name tattooed. This person is going to donate a kidney on a Monday and then devalue me on a Tuesday. They will go very, very far with this game. And that's what makes it really dangerous, because after the love bombing in the toxic relationship, here comes the devaluing stage where they disappear. It's the removal of the love bombing alone is going to make you feel a certain type of way. What did I do wrong? What's happening? You were so loving before. So it's this negative reinforcer that already has you wonky. Depending upon the abusive behaviors, there could be the silent treatment, they disappear, or in really, really toxic environments, there could be physical abuse and other ways that someone gets devalued. Then the cycle begins again. So we have the love bombing, devalue, discard, love bombing, devalue, discard. But the second time around, it actually looks like the makeup phase, the tension building, fallout, makeup phase, tension building, the fallout. And what happens when you go through the cycle of abuse like this, you end up with a trauma bond where you're looking for that toxic partner to fix it again. And it feels very much like a drug addiction. So you're looking for that fix. Let's get this love bombing started again. Let's have the makeup session. It's really, really intolerable.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
After my second marriage, there was a relationship that I had, and I try not to get too much into it with him specifically because he's highly litigious, but there were things about it that were insidious. In hindsight, this person was sort of the quintessential version of this. At that point, I was already a therapist. I was working in the Bronx at the Bronx High School of Science and the High School of American Studies as a therapist, basically as an outpatient mental health professional in a rather triage style environment. Working in the Bronx was phenomenal, and it gave me so much of a real education into trauma, inner cities, and what people are dealing with on a macro scale. I was doing that, and then I fell into the arms of somebody who was particularly malignant, and that changed my entire life. I was only in that relationship 1 year and 8 months. I was one of the lucky ones where, yes, the cycle of abuse was rapid. The ups and downs of the roller coaster ride were particularly close together. Because it was so rapid, I think was so destabilizing that I needed to get out of the relationship. I just could not withstand that experience. It was absolutely maddening. I would say it was the insatiableness. He was requiring sex too much. I felt I was losing my autonomy. I was going to sleep very early. I had really changed who I was. I was a shell of the person that I was before. I fled right at the beginning of COVID. He bleached my clothing, spit on me, called me a fat whore, went after my license, continues to be problematic. A lot of that came out in the press, and that's why I can kind of speak to it. I called my girlfriend. She came over and we filled her car and my car, and we just peeled out of there as best as we could. But it was particularly violent, not towards my being, but my belongings on the way out. That was really the beginning of the post-separation abuse, which is in some cases far worse. And that's why people stay. To rip off that Band-Aid is actually far more dangerous than to stay in the relationship. This idea when people say, well, why didn't you just leave? Let me tell you something. I know that it takes women 7 times approximately to get out of there. Some people don't make it out of the post-separation abuse phase alive. We see people getting murdered, strangled, poisoned, or losing their children. The narcissist will say, I'm going to take the kids from you, and have great success with the failure of the judicial system, specifically the family courts. So it's then when the misery really begins. Sorry to laugh. You have to laugh or you'll cry. And then I began this healing journey. I remember when I first left, I was trying to figure out what was going on. I couldn't quite understand some of his behaviors. I never really learned about personality disorders in graduate school. There were different potential diagnoses that he was struggling with, but he was not my client. So I was just imagining that there was some way that he was deeply flawed because there was a disconnect. So trying to manage that, I landed on TikTok of all places, and I started to look up some of the behaviors, and that's where I learned about narcissistic abuse, believe it or not. I just dove in fully and I began to just study all of the things. I became almost obsessed with understanding it, mostly because I felt that there was a duty as a clinician for me to get educated on this so that I could spread awareness. I think if you are a citizen who is not a clinician and you go to mouth off about this, there's this idea that, oh, she's just bitter. And because I had the credentialing, I felt I had to do this for the millions of silent victims to be the voice, in spite of the lashings that I was going to take and continue to take along the way. Then I came up with this idea to run across the state in my wedding dress so that I could hopefully shine a light on it. I knew that I was going to look ridiculous to some. I knew that I was going to look crazy, but I didn't care. I was going to lean into this. I got a team together, and we did. We traversed New York from Oswego to Manhattan, 285 miles in 11 days. And it was one of the most transformative experiences of my entire life. And then we subsequently ran New Jersey, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. We do this so that we can continue to shine a light on what is a very, very insidious form of domestic violence. So many people who are struggling in the family court system have no voice. People who have signed NDAs or people who have signed civil restraints. A good example of this was Gretchen Carlson, who really still can't talk too much about one of the biggest stories of the Me Too movement because her voice was taken. I try to be a voice, and even my voice is somewhat stifled because of litigiousness, but I try to be as outspoken as I can, because it's too important. People really, really suffer, die, are suicidal, lose their children, go to jail. It is basically domestic terrorism and human trafficking within the family court system specifically. So we have a lot of work to do in terms of advocacy, but that was the goal, was to make some noise. The media is interesting because I feel as if they stay away from the domestic violence cases. We have rules that protect children, like mandated reporting. I'm mandated to report if a child is being victimized. We have laws that protect even animals, but we don't do enough to protect women, period. And we see this trending in a really scary direction. So the media is definitely something that you want to harness. You have to play the game because you can't be neutral on a moving train. If you do not get ahead of the narrative, the narcissist will eviscerate you, get on a smear campaign and crush your entire career and manipulate all of your friends and family. So you have to get ahead of it. And the media is a great way to do that. Getting to learn how the judicial system works, how you want to avoid family court, trying to file civil matters as much as you can so you can get in front of juries. You kind of have to learn all of the players and see who is going to be careful with your story. There are a lot of toxic people in all of these environments. It's important to understand how the narrative will get shifted against you and how to play the game. We see a lot of people victim blaming, even as it relates to cult. Every cult is led by a narcissist, a sociopath, or a psychopath. Hard stop. whenever you hear about a cult, you see a lot of these cult shows on Netflix, people are very, very quick to assume that that would, quote unquote, never happen to me. And that is absolute horseshit. We're seeing this on a macro scale. In the political climate, we see people getting mind controlled in a variety of different ways, particularly in spiritual abuse, dangerous people in the church, and other sort of guru environments. So this idea that that could never happen to me, I could never find myself in that kind of a scenario with a cult or an abusive partner, is inaccurate because they come in different shapes and sizes. They do not look like a monster. These are your neighbors. These are poets, priests, and politicians. Understanding what these people look like, they are generally pretty charming. I think 1 in 4 CEOs is a psychopath directly. So there's a reason why they're able to climb that ladder. They're kissing babies and stabbing people in the back. They are totally adept at that. So it's important for people in the public at large to understand mind control and hold space for the people who have fallen victims to this experience, because they are brilliantly smart, wonderfully empathetic, powerful, rich people that fall into these environments. It's particularly difficult to extricate yourself from a cult, from a relationship with an abuser. To judge people based on that is really bad karma. This could happen to your precious children. So just being mindful around how it could happen to anybody, I think would add value for healing. It would add value for people who are seeking justice. If you haven't gone through something like this, it's a good idea when you don't know what you're talking about to just be quiet. We talk about this in dialectical behavioral therapy, which is getting into a non-judgment space. If you don't know, become a student.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I wish people understood the treachery of having no empathy. We hear this word empathy, and maybe we have ideas of what it means versus sympathy, and we get confused about what that could equal. But the idea of having no empathy as even a species is a threat. Think about it. When you have a baby, the baby cries, something kicks in innately. You go, oh shit, I got to take care of this baby because I love this baby and I'm going to make sure this baby survives. So here comes the bottle or the breast or the diaper or the nap. It's empathy that creates our survival. If we allow people with no empathy to sort of flit about the earth and create havoc, we have ourselves a major, major issue. We saw this in Nazi Germany. We have to really get serious about how we can assess for that and how we can keep world leaders from getting into positions of power that are sans empathy. This idea of learning about what it is, studying it. If you're a young intern out there, lean into brain scans, get into the neural world. You could change the world if you could pay attention and detect for no empathy and move the needle a little bit there. I think we know it exists, but I don't know that we do enough to protect others from something like this, because that's where the narcissist, the sociopath, and the psychopath are existing, is with no empathy. My book is Narcissistic Abuse, A Therapist's Guide to Identifying, Escaping, and Healing from Toxic and Manipulative People. It comes out October 29th. My goal with this book was to fuse the concepts of cult abuse and narcissistic abuse. I believe it's one of the only non-self-published book that attempts to fuse those concepts, because I think it adds a lot of value to understand that there are manipulative people that you could be in a relationship with, where you're in a cult of one, a cult of two, a cult of three, a cult of five, a cult of 900. We see this in family systems. Again, always led by a narcissist, a sociopath, or a psychopath. But that is the goal, is for people to sort of holistically look at mind control less as an interpersonal relationship with just one person, but they can manipulate their minions, their flying monkeys. And so we see social systems led by these people as being really dangerous. And you can have a cult of one or a cult of 1 million. The book is being published by Hachette. They have their own website, but also it's available for pre-order on Amazon. It's been such an amazing experience. When I first started writing the book, this idea of adding the cult piece felt weird. And it was kind of like, oh, I don't know, Vanessa, are people really going to identify with this? Are they going to understand what you're saying? And I kept advocating. They really stood by my side and held space for what wasn't essentially this pop culture thing. They really yielded and honored what I was trying to do. And it was brilliant. I felt so supported in that experience.
Do you have any words of encouragement for any survivors of narcissistic abuse or somebody who hasn't maybe gone through abuse, but are feeling similar emotions to something that you've shared today?
Yeah, I think stepping into your power might include to practice radical self-love, really getting into a space where you can develop a strong inner dialogue about yourself. What makes you wonderful? Are you creative? Are you smart? Are you funny? Playing with that and making it your gospel. The narcissist is allergic to your autonomy and your power. They want somebody who's going to fall in line. They want somebody they can groom. So organically, if you step into your power and you are radically self-loving, they don't want anything to do with that. So it's kind of a magic trick. People ask me all the time, how do I avoid them? You can't. They're all around you. But if you live autonomously, you're walking to the beat of your own drum or whatever that saying is. If you're doing your own thing, they will organically slither away because they will quickly learn that they can't suck your energy. So it's important to develop this in young children, independent thinking. Anytime your child questions authority, celebrate it. This is really important to develop within yourself and within your children, this radical independent thinker. If you think running across the state of New York in a wedding dress is crazy, it's because it is, and it's the good crazy. That's what you need to do, is try all of the crazy things. Be special in your thoughts, but don't fall in line. Be a little different. It's okay to be different. This idea of falling in line or coloring in between the lines is how narcissists will victimize you. So be different, celebrate, and just be happy there. Definitely get a therapist that understands narcissistic abuse, because if you don't and you find a therapist that says things like, he probably just meant this, or if you just go home, that's your mother, she loves you. These things can be really, really damaging. So if you can't find a narc savvy clinician, you're actually better off without a therapist and just leaning on people who understand this. There are plenty of life coaches that will rally around you. There are plenty of friends that potentially have gone through it, strangers, meetups, groups, sessions. It is far more damaging to have people perpetuate a narrative and make you feel crazier because you're very sensitive to that experience. So I would say lock arms with this sort of community. Those people are generally going to protect you and honor your story.
Thank you for that. Last question is, where can people find you?
Sure. So the website is tell-a-therapist.net. You can find me at Vanessa Reiser, LCSW on Instagram. And my nonprofit is tellatherapist.org, where we will connect you to a narc savvy clinician in your respective state.
Thank you for everything you do for the survivor community, but also society at large, because awareness is prevention. Is there anything else that we didn't get to touch on that you really want to be able to share before we end?
Just, I believe you.
What an amazing thing to end on. I think if anybody had said that to my mom at any point, her trajectory may have been very different. Thank you for doing such a deep service.
Of course. Thank you.
Narcissistic abuse is abuse perpetrated by people with narcissistic personality disorder. According to the DSM-5, the diagnostic criteria of narcissistic personality disorder includes a sense of entitlement, arrogance, considering themselves to be special, feeling self-important, taking advantage of others, needing great admiration, lacking empathy, envying other people, and having an obsession with fantasies of boundless power. Narcissistic abuse can be emotional, mental, financial, sexual, and physical in nature. The abuse can occur within any interpersonal relationship: romantic, platonic, professional, athletic, academic, or otherwise. The nature of the abuse is often cyclical and snowballing, utilizing the mechanisms of abuse that Vanessa explained: idealization, devaluing, and discarding. Narcissistic abuse can have significant effects on your mental and physical well-being. Although accurate statistics are hard to predict because of delayed or even non-reporting, according to statistics reported by Sandra L. Brown, the founder of the Institute for Relational Harm Reduction and Public Pathology Education, around 60 million people may be affected by a narcissistic relationship. If you believe you or a loved one is a victim of narcissistic abuse and are in immediate danger, please report the threat to 911. If you suspect you're a victim of abuse and are not in imminent danger, please visit the Domestic Violence Hotline at www.thehotline.org. You can also call 1-800-799-SAFE or text the word START to 88788. Further resources and related nonprofit organizations can be found at somethingwaswrong.com/resources. You are not alone. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
They awarded me the 2024 Freedom Award, which blew my mind. It was such an incredible celebration because there were all these politicians there, law enforcement, survivors, frontline people in this one huge ballroom together, all for this common cause of stopping human trafficking, online bullying, online sextortion. Everyone's coming together to help it. So it was an incredible honor. I'm so excited that they heard me, they believed me, and they saw how important my message was.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.